Welcome to Music for Youth presents the Right Track podcast with me, your host, Matt Haynes. In this episode, we talk to Sunderland's Tom A. Smith, an exciting young artist crafting infectious and unique songs. Already gaining praise from Sir Elton John, Miles Kane, NME and BBC Radio 1, Tom is an artist on the rise. To find out more information about our upcoming national festival in Birmingham, donate to us or get in contact, please go to www.mfy.org.uk. Please enjoy. Welcome to the Right Track podcast. And on this episode, I'm very pleased to say we have Tom A. Smith. Welcome, sir.
Hello, how are you doing? Thank you very much for having me.
I'm good. I must start with the most important thing is that we're both obviously from the Northeast.
Yeah.
You're from Sunderland. Mm. I'm from down the road in Hartlepool. So it's a Northeast fest in here. I'm loving it.
Yes.
So we've only got a limited amount of time, but I've got we'll work through as much as we can. So to begin with, I usually start with, I know your dad's, I've been doing my research. I know your dad is a big influence in terms of you getting into music and your musical tastes and stuff. And I've heard you talk about the sort of music that was played in your house was like Zeppelin, and I know you like the Smiths and stuff like that.
Mm.
So I was just wondering, what was your sort of, what's your first like musical memory that you can remember?
Oh, first musical memory. Well, I first remember asking for guitar lessons. Actually, my first musical memory is getting a SpongeBob guitar for Christmas. And it was completely unplayable. I don't even think it tuned or anything. It was like a £15 kid's guitar, but I absolutely loved it. I'd just sit and play. I taught myself in my guitar lessons to play, you know, Seven Nation Army on it and all that. And that was my earliest memory, is getting my SpongeBob guitar for Christmas. I think I was 4 at the time.
That leads quite well on to sort of, there's some lovely stories that you've told about sort of bands your dad knows, like you starting learning the guitar at sort of 4, which is amazing and something we always like to hear where we're based and what we're doing. Did those guys who taught you guitar, did they act as good mentors for your sort of future music career?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were massive, massive part of it, you know, and they still are now. There were a band called the Detroit Social Club, the first band who I used to get music lessons off, and it was the bass player Chris Courtney and the keys player Dale Knight, and also occasionally the guitarist called Johnny Bond, who then famously went on to play guitar for Catfish and the Bottlemen later on in his career. So that was obviously, that did help me sort of earlier on, you know, getting on a few slots with them. But no, they were a massive, massive part of it, you know. And it wasn't just the sort of learning music aspect of it that they were big with, you know. They'd come around every single week and we'd play football, we'd play FIFA, and then we'd do like a 10-minute guitar lesson. And it was just like...
That sounds like a blast.
Exactly. It was just sort of making music enjoyable early on, because it's very easy to sort of give a 5-year-old a guitar and say, yeah, let's do this and do that, when realistically they're not going to be that bothered. But we go, oh, let's play some football, play some FIFA, and then we'll have a look at this, you know, guitar part or whatever. And eventually it just became longer and longer, and then it was like our lessons, and I was just looking forward to it every single week.
Oh, that's good. I think at that age as well, it's about like making it exciting, isn't it? And making it engaging.
Absolutely,
And if you're doing that as a tutor or someone who's teaching someone guitar, then they've obviously, you know, nailed it with you there. Something that's a big appeal about your project is your band as well.
Yeah.
Like, the energy of, you know, you and the whole band, you can feel it. It even comes through like the TV. And it's like, I haven't really heard you talk about this, so it'd be nice to know. Like, how did you meet your band members? Could you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, go for it.
Yeah, so the guitarist and the drummer, I've known for pretty much my entire life, 14, 15 years. They used to play in bands with my older brother, and they're a couple of years older than me, they're both 21. So, and yeah, they played with my older brother, who's also 21, through like secondary school. So I was like, they were always like in the house doing band practices, or in band practices in school when I was in another band in the next room. So I knew them all very well, and we're all as close family friends as well. And they'd also done a couple of things for me here and there earlier on. You know, they did a couple of festivals back in the day with me, like Kendall Calling. So they were always going to be a guarantee to be part of my live sound. And my bassist is a girl called Katie, who I met through college over the last couple of years. You know, finished college now. And I sort of met her in the first like sort of week or so. And I just sort of knew that there was something really, you know, engaging about the way she played and how she performed on stage. And, you know, the good thing is, you know, like, because we all know each other and we're all such good friends. It's not like I've got session musicians to come in and perform with me. But the great thing about this is, you know, we're all friends and we all get along, and it's new for all of us. So every time we go and do a gig, or we do like a big show, we play with Cortinas or play a festival, it's like exciting and new for all of us. So like the buzz is there all the time. And it's a great laugh as well. We have great crack in the van and all that. So it's I get along with them all really, really well.
Yeah, I was gonna come to. Like, I imagine for touring, that's where the plus is as well, because you know these guys. Do you know what I mean? You've hung out with them for years, so you know that, like, when you're traveling around, jumping out for food or whatever, you know you can have a good crack with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said something really interesting about songwriting that I haven't been able to get out of my head, and I love the sort of disciplined approach that you sort of take to it. And you were saying that over lockdown, you sort of wrote 150 songs or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah. It was probably close to 200 by the end.
Man, that's a lot.
I'd sort of like, because when lockdown started was the year of my GCSE, so I'm in that group that just didn't end up sitting them and didn't end up doing them. So because I was away from school and doing all that, I sort of just decided I was going to treat it like a 9-to-5 job or a school day. So because I knew this is what I wanted to do, but I didn't really have the songs in the repertoire yet to go and take it forward and really go for it. So I just sort of, no matter how inspired or anything I felt, I would sit down and try and write a song and sit down and try and create something. And that's the thing, you know, like you can write 10, 20 songs, but I feel like that's better than writing 3 good songs. You write 20 songs, you're going to get, there's going to be something there that's usable. There's going to be something there that's good. And nobody has to hear the other 15 or whatever. Like that's just for you. But by the end of the sort of lockdown, there was nothing really that I wasn't happy with that I was making, because I'd sort of got myself into such a routine and I knew what was working for me and I knew what wasn't going to work for me. So by the end, I think I churned out about 9 albums, albums worth of songs.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think Noel Gallagher's got that lovely line, hasn't he, where he says, like, the best songs just fall from the sky, which I think
absolutely,
is
absolutely
beautiful, beautiful phrasing. So do you find, like, I mean, I've got a few favourite of yours, but I think Never Good Enough for me, I don't know why, but it really gets into me and it's like quite hypnotic. And I think I love that start of the production where you've got that sort of electrical whirl thing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you find that the songs that you really love yourself, does it come that Noel Gallagher way where it just suddenly comes on your lap, or has it come from that sort of disciplined, let's do this graft?
It varies, you know, 9 times out of 10, like Never Good Enough, for example, that sort of just fell out of the sky. It was, you know, I sort of, because like lyrically it's quite, even though I really love the lyrics of it and the message behind the lyrics, you know, it was, they're quite a simple, it's a simple structurally in a way. But I, with that one, I sort of knew that I wanted a saxophone solo in there, because my grandparents had got me a guitar synthesizing pedal, which like synthesized any sound. And it was just for when I was creating demos and all that at home. It's an actual saxophone on the recording. I think all the main ones, really, all the singles sort of did just drop from nowhere. You know, Wolves, the first single that I put out at the end of 2021, I made that, demoed it, wrote it and everything in half an hour, and recorded every single part of it. And everything was just sort of working. I just put a drum beat down, played a bass part, played a guitar part, played another guitar part, played a synth part, and sketched up some lyrics in about 5-10 minutes, and it was just all there. And that became the first single. I think you know that they're the best ones, because if you're instantly getting them that quick, there's no reason why anyone else can't instantly get it that quick with the melodies and the hooks or whatever. So I think, yeah, I think they're my favorite ones, and they're also the most satisfying.
It's lovely to hear you speak about songwriting. I keep thinking of lines said by a lot of my favorite bands, but there's that Richard Ashcroft one as well, where he says, like, when he's writing in the studio, Richard Ashcroft at the Verve, he says, if it doesn't excite you, it's not going to excite anyone else.
Yeah.
And I think you can, that's across the arts. You could not just music. I think that's such a good line as well. I wanted to talk to you about the Northeast music scene at the minute, because I don't know what's going on. There's something in the water. And it's like, I feel like in our region as a whole, in the whole of the Northeast, we have periods of being really potent with great bands. You know, we had the Future Heads and Maximo Park. And then there was, and then obviously there's like yourself, Sam Fender, the Lake Poets. There's so much good stuff coming out. And what I was wondering now, with the scene now, and you're obviously spearheading that, like, is it like a supportive scene, and are people sort of helping each other out? And is there a real sort of supportive culture there? Because I'd hope to think so.
I'd say there definitely is now. Yeah. There was quite a period of time over maybe the last 10 years where there maybe wasn't.
That's interesting.
It was just sort of like, you know, everyone left to their own devices and doing their own thing, and nobody really getting involved with each other. And I mean, especially in Sunderland itself, you know, you always had like your main names in Sunderland, your Frankie and the Heartstrings, your Future Heads, who sort of drove the whole pretty much culture of Sunderland, let alone the music scene. But I think in recent times, I think we can all give a massive thanks to Sam Fender. I know he's on the other side of the river to me. We can all give a massive thanks to what he's done for the Northeast scene, because he's made it seem possible. Because obviously up in the Northeast, you don't really get many people from the industry and all that coming up here and doing that. You sort of got to make your own way down there and down south to get that. But he sort of brought it up here a little bit more. And it's just given so many opportunities for so many artists like myself. And you're right, I feel like there is this real desire for people to do well in the Northeast at the minute when it comes to music. And, you know, there's so many new venues are popping up everywhere. And, you know, so many important people within the scene who are becoming more involved, you know, nationwide. I think it's really exciting at the minute. And, you know, it's a good place to be, the Northeast, right now when it comes to music.
For sure. It certainly looks like it. I think from the outside, people sort of think, when they look at the sort of Northeast music scene, we've obviously got Generator. And then there's like the Sage, who like push a load of new music. And then obviously the Clooney. But I don't think people quite realise what a hot pot of talent it is. Do you know what I mean?
But absolutely, yeah.
Obviously, like with, you know, yourself, Sam Fender, and various of the bands, you know, it's like, it's coming up, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Northeast is coming up.
I can feel it.
There's a really nice segue into the next question I wanted to ask you, which was, there's been a few bands from up north who, they're sort of, I don't know where the myth of it was, like, to sort of make an impact in the music scene, you sort of had to move up to Manchester or down to London. Down to Manchester, down to London. But like, I think now that because of how social media is and because of the buzz you can create, people can, you know, Sam stayed in North Shields, hasn't he? And like the Kaiser Chiefs have stayed in Leeds. So it can, and, you know, Future Heads, I think, we've stayed in Sunderland. So it's like, it can be done. What I was going to ask you was, have you ever considered like moving to London or anything like that? Because the momentum you have obviously is amazing. Is it something you've considered, like moving away, or are you going to try and go, right, let's see what I can do just from here?
No, definitely. I think the long-term plan is to stay here. And I do all my recording and everything like that in London, which, you know, I just think it's a great creative hub down there, and sort of everybody in the mainstream sort of lives there, really. But I feel like it's not necessarily, you know, the fact that there's nothing going on up here that is and staying and living here, that's the difference. I think it's more so just actually performing live down south. I don't think it's necessarily leaving where you are that is the important thing. I think it's just trying to get everywhere else. And I think people in the Northeast really like seeing people doing things from their home everywhere else, because
100%.
You know, because like it's, you want to create a buzz, you want to create some sort of desire. And like, if I played in shows in Sunderland every single week, I wouldn't have that desire. You know, nobody would in Sunderland would want to see me and say, "Oh, Tommy Smith's on again here." So like, I think in the Northeast, I've only got two gigs planned for this entire year, including, you know, my big headline show at the end of the year at the Fire Station, which it's buzzing for, and it's, and you know, the tickets are flying out the door. But if I, you know, did that every single week, they wouldn't. And the fact that I can, you know, and I understand that it's, you know, it's not cheap to do. It's really not cheap to do. And I think it's more important that early on you sort of just hone in on your craft at performing live, I suppose, which I'm still doing now, you know, and doing your pub gigs and doing your busking and doing your local shows. But I feel like getting to that next stage, it's important to try and look elsewhere and look around and try and meet as many people from outside of here as you can, because then it's that sort of thing of how can you make it nationwide instead of, you know, a buzz just in the Northeast.
It's interesting. It's interesting that, yeah, it's like getting, just sort of building the audience from, you know, just that graft of touring.
Mm-hmm.
You've just announced another slot at Glastonbury, and I know you've played Glastonbury very early, and I love the place too. And I think it's one of those festivals, because people are, until you go there or, you know, you've performed there like yourself, I don't think people realize how special it is until you go and experience it.
Oh,
do you know
no,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I
yeah, it's,
sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's a pretty magic place. Like it's like a city. It's honestly, it's, you know, this, I don't think I've ever been to a place with more stages. I think there's like 50 stages or something across the whole place. It's just absolutely wild. And to be doing it again this year is, it's pretty mad with buzzing for it.
I feel like it's one of those places as well that, like, I say to people, even if you're not mad about music, like, there's performing arts, there's theatre, there's comedy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
You can go and watch, like, I think the most random one, I went from Rudimental and I went to a circus tent and like Stuart Lee came out. So it's like a pretty, like, it's like an eclectic mix of stuff. So you've got your big tour coming up at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make sure to plug that in the episode notes. We'll make sure to plug that everywhere we can. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about touring. Which cities and towns have you performed at where the reaction's been surprising, where you've thought, whoa, this has gone down like I'd never expected it to?
Yeah, yeah. No, there's been a few, you know. I think a big one for me is Bristol. Every time I've played in Bristol, for some reason, it's literally just been like one of the best gigs I've ever done. It's like, it's so strange. Early on last year, I did Bristol O2 Academy with a gang of youths, and it was literally just me, a guitar, and four pedals. It was pin drop silence, and it was, you know, there was 1,600 people around in this room, and like, oh, you could hear a pin drop, and it was one of my favourite gigs I've ever done. And every time I've gone back there since, you know, I played the Fleece in Bristol, and the reaction was phenomenal. And it's a great city as well. There's so many places to go afterwards. and like, yeah, every time I've been there, the reaction has been phenomenal. And it's going to be on the tour again this year. Scotland, every time I play Scotland, the reaction's brilliant. I think that's pretty expected, though, to be fair. You know, it's pretty wild up there. Manchester's amazing as well. Sheffield. Yeah, there's so many places. I think everywhere is just very, like, everywhere just wants you to do well. Other than London. London's scary. No, it's the same. Yeah, it's great. But no, everywhere is sort of being dead supportive. But I think that those are the standout ones, yeah.
And what I wanted to ask you was, it's always a question to ask, especially like young artists. What's your music department like at school? Like, did they see, because like the one obvious thing about you is the voice is there, it's killer. So did they see that and sort of champion it? Or what, did they sort of support you?
It was a mix, really. It was like, I got along with the teachers there really, really well. I felt like sometimes, you know, it was, you know, because I was doing stuff outside of school, it wasn't involved in the school, so I had nothing to do with them, that sort of thing. But, you know, I was always involved in, you know, like the rock nights and performing and stuff like that. So, and part of the school shows. So, yeah, I suppose. And I went to college and did like a sort of BTEC and A level in music performance, and you know, got to meet other musicians my age, and you know, and they were incredibly supportive. You know, I think my main tutor, even though he might not have been overly chuffed with me, pretty much missing every single day for 2 years, it was incredibly supportive, and you know, they were always wanting to do well, because obviously it was me and my bassist who were both on the course who were literally just never in for an entire year, always touring. But they were all supportive. But secondary school, it was less so, I suppose. But they still had nothing against it, and they wanted me to do well with it, but they were never themselves really got too involved with it.
The sort of leading on for like the word like education as well, like in terms of advice and stuff, you've said some really interesting things about, you've had some, you know, you've played with some amazing people, you know, Gang of Youth, Elton, of course. I know that keeps coming up.
Yeah,
but like, you know, it's an amazing name to have behind you.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. And I always like to ask, like, it doesn't have to be from one of these sort of influential music figures, but have you received a piece of advice on your musical journey so far that's really stood out?
There's been a couple, yeah. You know, and more so earlier on. And I sort of touched on one of them earlier. But Matt from a band called Little Comet, years ago, told me, it doesn't matter what you do, just keep writing songs. I sort of said it earlier, but you can write so many songs and only a select few can be any good, but that doesn't matter. Because then you've got a select few that are good. And also one, you know, Barry Hyde from the Future Heads, he's been a massive, massive part of me learning music and learning the craft and, you know, learning guitar. And I got music lessons from him for years. And he once said to me, if you're not very good, you're not very good. It doesn't matter. Never are you going to come off stage and people are going to go to you, that was rubbish, that was awful. It's just never going to happen. Everyone's just going to, oh, that was brilliant, Tom. Well done. Really good. So you're best off just going out there and enjoying it, really. And one other piece that somebody once said to me is, because you always get sort of told that you're on stage, you're the one in charge, you're the one in control, when realistically, the 150, 200 people in front of you are the ones in charge, in control. You know, that you've got to earn their respect in a sense. Even though, you know, you go to a gig, you should be respectful to who's on, you should listen, but that does never happen. So you've got to go out there and you've got to earn it. You know, they've bought the tickets, they've paid to come and watch it. So you've got to sort of yourself, you know, you're the one who needs to take control instead of automatically having it, I suppose.
I wanted to sort of touch upon as well that you have a regular producer you work with, don't you? That is it?
Yeah,
I can't remember his name. Is it?
He's called Larry Hibbert. Yeah. He's based in London. He's worked with like Seagulls, Nothing But Thieves, and like a couple of decently big artists over the last few years. So yeah, he's a great one to work with.
Seagulls are wicked. I was wondering, like, when you, like, you've worked with this producer for a while now, when you go into the studio, like, do you have a particular vision of how you want the songs to, well, like a sound of how you want the songs to be? Do you go in and you go, say you take a song and you go, this is how I hear it? Do you start with that, or do you sort of let Larry guide you in?
No, I mean, there's been times I've got such a vision and know exactly every little bit that's going to happen in the studio before I get there.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, to the point where, you know, we've had songs fully recorded and done in 5-6 hours. And I'm playing every little instrument. The last couple of records, we got a drummer in to play the drums live, because even though I'm playing a bit of drums, I don't think I'm that good. I'm always, because obviously I'm creating, and because I've sort of over the last couple of years sort of made my own home studio at home, like slowly got stuff together, and so I'm always got full demos of every song, with the drum parts, with guitar parts, with every part. So basically what happens is we go to the studio and I go along, and all the difference is just making it sound that 40-30% better and more professional. Every little part is just the exact same as, you know, the part on the demo. So we just I just re-record it and recreate it with better equipment, pretty much.
I knew you. From everything I've watched of you, I thought you'd say I've got this vision. I know where I'm going.
Yeah,
you know
yeah. What I mean? Absolutely.
What I wanted to ask you as well was, you know, you're such a young guy, and in terms of being sort of a young musician now, I was wondering, what are the challenges that you've faced in your sort of career so far? Obviously, there's, you know, everything's working out great and you're nailing it and everything's, you know, it is amazing. But are there any sort of things you've hit where you think, you've thought, God, that was hard, or I didn't think that would be so difficult?
I couldn't really like pin something on it really, because I think the most important thing is you just sort of work hard at it and things come from that. But you know, there's of course been times where it's like things haven't really gone the way I thought they'd go. For example, I did a show in London last year. It's always London, God. We did it. It was in a place called The Social.
I know The Social, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great venue. I'm going to be back there again in the summer, playing another show. I'm buzzing for it.
You're doing communion
thing? Yeah. And actually, this show was one of them as well last year, but we were lower down on the bill. But literally, everything that could have went wrong, went wrong. I mean, we put the pedals on stage. Someone might have tinkered with every single pedal on every single board. it was our first time using like samples and that on stage, with the trigger pad and all that. And our drummer kept counting me in wrong, so the triggers would go off, and then we'd start playing. And literally everything that went wrong could have gone wrong went wrong. But that's part of it, you know. That's how you learn, and that's how it doesn't happen again. Because if that never happens, then you know, there'll be a time where it does. So you've got to get them sort of stuff out the way. So now we have now got other plans in place, and we do other things on stage to make sure that doesn't happen. But you know, with us being young and all that, there's been scenarios where, you know, I've maybe not been somewhere on the bill as maybe I thought I could be because of my age and stuff like that. But you know, that's all sort of stuff you've got to put up with, because you know, it's just part of the scene, really. Yeah, exactly. You don't really grow and develop from that. So anything that's gone wrong, I'm quite happy that they have, because you know, it's how you get better and how you learn at it. And everyone would be a rock star if it was easy. Everyone would do it, but it's not. It takes a lot of time and working at it. You know, I can't really do anything else. I'm all right with FIFA and Call of Duty, but playing guitar and singing is my main thing. No, so I think it's just, you've got to expect things to go wrong, because if they don't, then something is going wrong.
I love that. I think that's quite inspiring, Tom, what you've said there. I think it's like, yeah, you do. I think as well, what's great about people touring as much as you have, especially the end, you know, the dates, the end of this year, you're going to be traveling everywhere. So if people are listening to this, if you want to see Tom, he's playing in your town.
Absolutely,
definitely around.
I'm everywhere.
But like you say, like, you do have to experience various things, because you know it, you know, builds you up, and then you sort of there's no, you know, like you said, I love, you said it beautifully. You know, it's like you keep learning, and you do, and then you get better and better and better, and then this, you know, the sky's the limit for you anyway. And I want to do some sort of fun ones. And now what I can do with this podcast, which I'm very pleased about, because you know, Northeast in the house and all that. They're gonna be two Northeast focused questions, but they're fun questions.
Oh God.
So the first one is, can you give me your top three Northeast venues?
Ooh, top three Northeast venues. So I love the Clooney in Newcastle. First place I ever played when I was 8 years old. It was the first gig I ever did. So it's always got a pretty, you know, special place in the world of music for me. Other rooms that I like. I really like Boiler Shop. I think it's a great room in there. It's a lovely sort of love the layout of it all and how they can cut it off to be smaller and all that as well. Oh God, now I need you. There's a last one, and there's so many. Oh, I've knocked up. maybe I love Independent in Sunderland. You know, it's a quality venue throughout the evening, and then there's a great nightclub on the night too. Great place, but there's so many. You know, we got the Peacock in Sunderland as well. Middlesbrough Empire too, of course, the Fire Station.
I'm a bit biased being a Teesider. I do love the Empire.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's going to be on the tour as well at the end of the year. I played it with Lathams last year. It's just pretty mad that I'm doing it myself this year.
It's great. Man.
It's mental. There's so many quality venues. Actually, I think in the North East, there's better venues than anywhere else, you know. Like, there's so many cool, unique rooms.
Yeah, the Empire's... It's got so much history to it, the Empire, as well, in terms of indie bands and stuff like that. It's amazing. Right, so the next one is your top five Northeast musical heroes.
Top five musical heroes in the Northeast. Eric from The Animals.
What a guy he is. What a start.
Yeah, love absolutely. That. Barry Hyde from Future Heads, he's always gonna be there for me because he is a genius.
Part of the Sunderland fabric as well.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. You know, we've got Frankie Francis from Frankie and the Heartstrings as well. I might just include them as in general because Dave Harper, the drummer, is an absolute legend, and we're very unfortunate to lose him a few years ago.
Didn't know that. That's very sad.
Yeah, devastating. And of course, they run Pop Rex and all that, which is a brilliant place up in Sunderland. So, and they're a massive part of the culture behind Sunderland. So I've got to include them. So top five. Oh, here we go. Sam Fender. He's got to be what he's doing for the Northeast scene right now. And I don't think there's ever going to be a bigger Northeast artist than him. You know, he's just like, he's on another league now.
Some of those songs are like undeniable, aren't they? I felt like real sort of moment for Northeast music was Dead Boys. When I first heard that, I was like,
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think he's not even just in the Northeast, but I think in terms of actual music artists, I think he's the first one we've had in a while where I feel like the songs are going to stand the test of time, you know, and I feel like that's the difference. You can have so many songs that get top 40 and all that, but if they don't stand the test of time, then you can't call them classics or anything like that. And I think he's going to be the first to do that in a while. So he's got to be on there. So we've got one more left. Oh, no. One more. Trying to rattle off in my head. Who I've maybe not said, and I'm going to be missing somebody really massive here who's going to message us. So many. We are thinking of... I'm going to try and come back to someone. Marty Longstaff, you know, Lakeport. What a legend he is. He's been a brilliant part of, you know, my musical journey early on. You know, played a few shows with him back in the day. And of course, he's got the song, but it's not. Nobody else has got a song on Netflix.
And you're a fan, aren't you? Do you know what I mean?
So. Absolutely, yeah. So, he's got to be in there too.
And finally, I'll say this. This is a bit of impossible question for a musician, so I'm going to make it a bit more refined. So, I'm sending you off to a desert island, and I'm going to hire you up. High is the most Northeast thing I've seen for a long time. I'm going to throw you up three albums. So it can just be maybe albums you're feeling at the moment, but what are you taking with you to keep you company?
Oh, does it have to be Northeast or is it like...
It can be anything.
All right, okay, cool. OK Computer, 100%. That's in there for me. One of the greatest records ever made. I'd like something new and fresh as well. So Wonder Horse's most recent record, is an absolute, you know, masterpiece. And final album. Today we're going to take something a bit more electronic. We'll go like Demon Days, Gorillaz, just so then we've got something a little different in there.
Oh, that's a great eclectic mix of stuff. Tom, it's been such a joy to speak to you.
Thanks so much for popping on.
We'll plug the upcoming tour and your tracks and everything in the episode notes and everywhere we can. I'll definitely be coming to either the Communion or the Camden Assembly because I'm based in London. So I can't wait.
Come to both.
I can't wait to see you perform. And yeah, man, just keep doing your thing and keep flying the Northeast flag. And thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you very much for having us. It's been great.